This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 4th of April 2025. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper, with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 4th of April. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. Now, the main headlines this week: rent increase would be death of market. Outdoor swimming pool an option for derelict site. And council set for broad changes. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which is rent increase could be death of market. Traders slam council plans for 20% hike. I think it will change the face of the market. That is the warning of one stallholder at Winchester Market after it was announced that the City Council is hiking their rents. The council will be increasing rates by up to 20%, with some traders saying it would massively impact them, and even if they will be stay trading... and even if they will stay trading in Winchester at all. Traders, including Kerry Howard, met council representatives on Wednesday, March the 26th, to discuss the increase. Kerry Howard, who runs Bella Nova Bags and Accessories, said that if the price of the pitches increases, it will cost her £2,500 more a year to trade in Winchester before she has even sold any products. The daily charge of £70 will go up to £85. She said, "I think the upshot is we are waiting for them to get back to us. I think it may be the death of the market over time, because this is already the most expensive market. I think there will be stallholders who come on a casual basis. I think it will change the face of the market, sadly. We have all been loyal. It is not good for the high street. We are all confused and stressed." Peter Horn, who sells antique photographs, said, "Whatever we say will not make a difference to the price increase. The object of the meeting the other day was to meet the company that is doing it. It depends on how much they put the prices up by, and we don't know what they are going to be put up by. Winchester is one of the most expensive markets in the area. Because the council has increased the parking charges, there is lower footfall. The park and ride does not run on Sundays, so you don't see many people in. The Friday is the quietest day, especially since they put the parking charges up." Margaret and David Fraser sell American Sweets on their stall, which is normally located in Middlebrook Street outside Sainsbury's. Mr. Fraser said, "We were expecting an increase anyway due to the nature of things, but the amount was upsetting. They did not explain why there is going to be an increase or anything like that, or why the prices between different pitches is different." A council spokesperson said, "The City Council is keen to build on the popularity and success of the street market and is putting plans in place, working alongside its market operator and traders to provide a well-curated, high-quality, locally-driven street market which meets the expectation of visitors and which supports the local economy. The City Council has invested an additional £50,000 into the market, and following a recent retendering of the market contract, the new contract prices places importance for the operator to support and actively encourage a diverse range of traders to promote the market and propose new activity that attracts more people. We want to work collaboratively with traders, as well as we all want the same thing, a vibrant and popular street market for the city centre. We have needed to increase prices to cover the increased cost of running the market, but this is carefully considered to ensure the price remains competitive while at the same time reflecting the popular location. At a recent meeting, we were really pleased to hear from traders directly. These meetings, which we'll continue to hold, will help us work more closely to build on the market's success."
Outdoor swimming pool, an option for derelict site. The leader of Winchester City Council has not ruled out a Lido for the site of the collapsed property deal with Southampton University. Councillor Martin Todd called River Park a difficult site after the university pulled out of redeveloping it. A Lido outdoor swimming pool was one possibility. Councillor Martin Todd said that the next steps for the former leisure centre in Gordon Road are an open process, saying that the council is open to the Wright partner submitting plans following the shock announcement on Thursday, March the 20th. He said, "As I said when I made the announcement, this is going to be an open process. There are lots of ideas being shared at the moment, and if the Wright partner comes forward, we are open to all of them. There are some planning restrictions. The site cannot be housing, for example, but if someone wants to build and operate a Lido, for example, we'd be keen to hear more. It's a difficult site. Aside from the problem of flooding, maintaining access to the bowling club means that the former leisure centre is surrounded by tarmac or concrete on all four sides. And without closing or rebuilding the bowling club somewhere else, that isn't going to change. Having an open process means that the public will have a proper say during the process, but it also means being open to potential partners who might want to refurbish and reuse some or all of the existing building as part of their proposal. I know some people would like the building to come down, but I don't think it's right to close off the option of reusing part or all of the building until we've all had the chance to listen to any ideas that come forward. As previously reported, the University of Southampton said that it would not move forward with its plans for River Park as it announced millions of pounds of investment in its existing Winchester sites, including the School of Art. The land on which the former leisure centre sits was bought for £5,350 in 1902 by the forerunner of the City Council. The deal stipulated that it could be used for any building that might be required for the benefit of the said city, except industrial dwellings. The Friends of River Park were delighted by the news, with Rose Burns saying, "It's high time the redundant and increasingly derelict leisure centre building was demolished and perhaps replaced by grassland until the decision is made about the future of the site."
excuse me, and our third headline this week is entitled "Council Set for Broad Changes." Interim proposals for sweeping changes in local government structure have been approved by Hampshire County Council. At a meeting on Thursday, March the 20th, the full County Council agreed on the outline plans for local government reorganisation, or LGR. These plans, supported by all 15 councils in the Hampshire and Solent area, were submitted to central government the following day. The proposed changes are a part of the government's broader ambition to replace the existing two-tier structure of local government with a smaller number of unitary councils. For Hampshire and the Solent region, this means that the unitary councils will be responsible for delivering all services currently provided by the 15 councils in the area. The County Council has collaborated with council leaders and chief executives from across the Hampshire and Solent area to develop the interim plan based on the government set criteria. The County Council has also set its own guiding principles to reflect its key duties as the largest local authority in the area. Data suggest that the creation of more smaller councils under LGR would be more costly for taxpayers, while larger councils would deliver immediate and ongoing efficiencies for the public purse and make local government more sustainable. Councillor Nick Adams-King, leader of Hampshire County Council, said, "Not only are we operating at scale, but our county council teams are also in our towns and villages every day, working at the front line of communities and in our residents' homes, such as caring for adults and children who are in vital need of our help, protection and support, protecting people's health, educating children, maintaining the roads, delivering library services, helping people to recycle more and better, and managing much of the county's green space. We are responsible for 85% of local government services and budgets within Hampshire. Councillor Adams-King stressed the importance of ensuring that whatever form LGR takes, local government should have a solid and sustainable footing to address the ongoing financial challenges while delivering the best possible public services for residents. He also warned that the creation of new unitary councils mean county-wide services need to separate into smaller units.
And there's a follow-on article now called by Councillor Mark Reach, Stalinist Plans for New Council Slammed. A Winchester City councillor has compared Labour's proposed mega councils to oblasts in Stalin's Russia. Fiercely criticising the government's devolution white paper, which could see all Hampshire's local authorities merged into one, Lib Dem councillor Mark Reach argued that the shake-up risks being unsuited to residents' specific needs at an extraordinary meeting on Wednesday, March the 19th. Councillor Reach said, "What a shame. A beleaguered government imposing a top-down reorganisation on the people of this county, trampling over 830 years of history. Excuse me. A Stalinist reorganisation establishing oblasts of 500,000 people across this country. Is this what our residents want? That's not what they've told me." Excuse me. "I suspect that's not what they've told my colleagues. Nevertheless, if this is how it must be, then we must make the best of it. Most of this fantastic district is parished, meaning residents have a council of their peers looking after their neighbourhood. But here in the glorious city of Winchester, we do not. We require assurances that here the needs of this city will be protected and the needs of its residents will be considered. Today we have a town forum, but tomorrow we may find that this is a city of 40,000 people in a swelling sea of over 500,000. So I guess my question for the leader is, what assurances can he give that the particular requirements of the residents of this city will be considered in this thrilling upending of local government arrangements?" To this, the leader of the council, Martin Todd, replied, "I can give you an absolute assurance that one of the priorities we put in the council plan is that every area of our district will be represented by a local community or parish council. We've already started the work to ensure that we move to a community governance review for the City of Winchester. We're absolutely clear about that. It's a resourced project, we've had the request from the town forum, and we'll be moving ahead with it. It's clearly the right thing to do at this stage." Councillor Todd called this process parishing. It's unclear at this point what these new parish or town authorities would look like in real terms. So that concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, then Christian comment, letters to the editor, editorial comment, first person, and Belgarum. So we start with the death announcements this week. Barrett, Kevin John Barrett, who died on the 7th of March, aged 75. Burke, Raymond Brian Burke, died on the 20th of March after a long illness. Chester, Rex Chester, died on the 6th of March, aged 89. Jones, Elizabeth Joy Jones, known as Joe, died peacefully at Tegfield House on the 8th of March, aged 89. And Leighton Davis, Carol Ann Leighton Davis, died peacefully at home on the 30th of March, aged 81. Now we have Christian comment, please, Andrew.
And this week's Christian comment is entitled Living Well in These Challenging Times. We are all living in challenging and uncertain days. with many people troubled and lacking in peace. Is it possible to live a peaceful, contented, and satisfied life? I believe it is. One of the most familiar passages in the Bible to many is Psalm 23, a psalm of David, which begins as he says, "The Lord is my shepherd." The Lord provided for him, protected, and even took him through the darkest days of loss and grief, which we all go through at times. David concluded that God's goodness and mercy had been with him every day of his life, and he had God's assurance that when he passed from this life, he would be in God's presence forever. After leaving school, I went through the disappointment of unemployment and failed work exams. How did I cope in those times? I knew that God was with me, that he loved and cared for me, and that he would lead me in the path he would take me on in this life. And that has been my experience in all areas of life, not only work, but in marriage, family, friends, and home life. God is the one who has provided, protected, and blessed. Love for God and concern for other people is the foundation of a happy life for all of us. And despite the challenges along the way, God's presence has brought me contentment, joy, and peace. So, as our thoughts turn to Easter in 2 weeks' time, I hope you can also come to know Jesus, the one who died for us to bring salvation to our souls and forgiveness of sins, and was resurrected to give us a purposeful life, hope for tomorrow, and eternal life in heaven if we put our trust in him. And that was written by the Reverend Richard Sercombe of the Elim Church in Romsey.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters to the editor. Nikki, please.
And the first one, headed "Council Need the Right Balance," from Andrew McMurtry. Winchester City Council are too keen on their power tools. I feel sorry for the birds and the insects. As soon as spring arrives, it has its head cut off. Sensitive management of the natural environment does need to strike a balance between the needs of people and of nature. The River Park Recreation Ground in Winchester is a hive of sporting activity, from cricket and rugby to volleyball and the weekly park run. But the whole area does not need to be mowed to within an inch of its life. In farming, there has traditionally been a surrounding buffer or headland, allowing space for nature to thrive. Tree management needs to keep people safe while retaining a habitat for wildlife. We have recently had three perfectly healthy trees cut down to the ground when they didn't need to be. And as for the powered leaf blower chasing a handful of leaves around the tennis court at 7:15 a.m, we seem to have become too enamoured with our mowers, strimmers and chainsaws, and to be forgetting that nature needs to be nurtured. And that from Andrew McMurtry, Monk's Road, Hyde.
Time for a cuppa. I'm writing to ask your readers to make time for a cuppa for Dementia UK, the Dementia Specialist Nursing Charity, so we continue to provide vital support to families facing dementia. By the time you've boiled your kettle, another person will have developed dementia. It's a huge and growing health crisis. One in two of us will be affected by dementia in our lifetime, yet families are not getting the support that they so urgently need. At Dementia UK, we believe every family affected by dementia should have the support of a dementia specialist admiral nurse. But right now, we can't reach everyone who needs us. That's why this May, we are encouraging people across the nation to pour a cuppa for our largest annual fundraiser to raise crucial funds to help us recruit more admiral nurses. Dementia doesn't just impact the person with the diagnosis, it affects everyone around them. Caring for someone with dementia can be incredibly challenging, both physically and emotionally. In January 2025, Dementia UK commissioned a survey of 1,000 people in the UK who care for or have cared for a person living with dementia. 9 in 10 found that the transition from family member to full-time carer impacted on their own mental health, and 4 in 10 feel or felt guilty about using care services. But it's important they know they are not alone. Dementia UK's Admiral Nurses offer life-changing support and advice to the whole family whenever it's needed. The work on our free National Admiral Nurse Dementia Helpline, in our face-to-face and virtual clinics, and in the community and in GP practices, hospitals and care homes. We have an ambitious target of reaching a total of 1,000 Admiral Nurses by 2030 to provide essential support and advice to families living with dementia across the country. But to fund these vital nursing posts, we rely on donations from the public, which is where making Time for a Cuppa comes in. This year, Time for a Cuppa is proudly sponsored by Nationwide Building Society. We're coming together to make, bake and brew to raise funds for families facing dementia, and you can do the same. Time for a Cuppa Week will take place from the 1st of May to the 8th of May, but people can host their own event at any point in the year. Whether you invite friends round to your house for a cuppa or put on an event at work, you can help us ensure that no family faces dementia alone. Sign up for your free Time for a Cuppa fundraising pack at dementiauk.org/timeforacuppa. If you need advice or a support on living with dementia, contact Dementia UK Admiral Nurse Dementia Helpline on 0800 888 6678. I'll repeat that phone line. It's 0800 888 6678, and that was by Dr. Hilda Hayo, Chief Admiral Nurse and Chief Executive of Dementia UK.
And our next letter is entitled Pie in the Sky, and it comes from Murari Kaushik. I received through my door yesterday a glossy 6-page leaflet, Bishop Waltham Matters, with lots of pretty photographs, tables and a pie chart. It's jolly nice that in this day and age of austerity, cutbacks to benefits, rising energy costs and food banks, that our parish council at least continues to grow at a healthy rate, and not least in its levy on Bishop Waltham's residence. In addition to the certainly invaluable ground maintenance staff, they have long had their fair share of admin, clerk, deputy clerk level staff to keep the bureaucratic wheels turning in the office. Not to mention the local community chap in high-vis jacket, whom the last time I saw him on the high street was exercising himself somewhat over some small fruit item dropped on the pavement in our quote-unquote high-crime town. Now, it appears they have recruited an upgraded estates manager to replace their halls manager and, wait for it, a marketing, communications and events manager. Now, with all due respect to the young person who is taking up this position, and wishing her genuinely all the very best in her life and career, not many people frankly know of or particularly care about the work of the council. They are too busy trying to get their kids to school, paying their outgoings and feeding the family with the limited means at their disposal. The fancy pie chart tells me the parish council is essentially in charge of the recreation grounds, parks and buildings, not even dog bins. Hence the undoubted need for their excellent team of ground maintenance staff. But as for the rest of it, question. And that's from Murari Kashik, Cherry Gardens, Bishop's Waltham.
And this from Robert Crave, suggested time to change. The call by Labour Party MP Alex Mayer to move the clocks forward by 2 hours during the summer months, as reported in this paper on March 29th, has been rejected by the government. Thank goodness. Double summertime was a nightmare for a young child trying to get to sleep when it didn't get dark until almost midnight. It was a relief when it was ended. The points made by Ms. Mayer are, however, well taken. Lighter evenings would reduce the use of energy, save accidents, and stave off depression. Lighter evenings in the winter would do those things better. When Harold Wilson experimented with keeping BST all year round, it was a great success. Unfortunately, the right-wing press orchestrated a consolidated campaign against it, and Wilson backed down. While it worked well for the Saxon South, it was not so good for the English North and Scotland. Other countries have more than one time zone. Why couldn't we? Thus, when the switch comes to GMT next fall, let the Saxon lands, Wessex and Essex, remain on British Saxon time to retain the extra hour of daylight in the evenings. We Saxons would also ward off the extra deaths which are triggered by the stress caused by putting the clocks forward in the spring. Keeping to BST all year round would benefit cows by giving them a regular milking time, which is not changed twice a year. A reminder. It is St. Alphege's Day. It's various spellings of this word. On April the 19th. Celebrate it by flying the gold cross on a red ground, identified as the Rhotic flag, because it represents the letter R in maritime signals. R is representative of Wessex Beach. Alphege grew up near Bath, which was Bishop of Winchester, and was martyred by Danes in Kent. Because of his martyrdom, he's entitled to a cross. And that from Robert Craig, Priory Road, Weston Supermare, Nether, Wessex.
Research help. Researchers at the University of Southampton are exploring parents' experiences caring for a child after surgery. This project is part of a master's degree in psychology. If you are a parent of a 5 to 24-year-old who is still experiencing pain following surgery up to 5 years ago, please get in contact to take part in the study. Your participation will include one interview, either online or in person, at the School of Psychology at the University of Southampton. This interview will last approximately 45 minutes, where you will be given the opportunity to share your experience. If you'd like to participate or would like further information, please email Zara Hussein at zrh1g21@southampton.ac.uk. And that's, as I said, from Zara Hussein, School of Psychology, University of Southampton.
And our next letter is Slots Not Needed. I agree wholeheartedly with David Morton, that's Chronicle Letters, March 27, comments regarding the unnecessary requirement to book a slot to use the Winchester Refuse, Waste and Recycling Centre. Having used it many times prior to the necessity to book a slot, I have never experienced a queue. People using the site had plenty of room to dispose of refuse, so the idea of it being necessary to book a slot also takes up valuable time from the excellent, helpful team. Further, fly tipping is more of a problem than previously. Time for common sense to prevail. And that's from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
And from Andrew Beadle, headed Cost of Change. We now know that, as required by Angela Rayner, local government in the county, is to be reorganised. Hampshire County Council will devolve its services and become a strategic authority with an elected executive mayor. With the exception of the Isle of Wight, the remainder of the county will be divided into three or four unitary authorities, providing all services within their areas, as Southampton and Portsmouth currently do. Although probably not popular, it is likely that the New Forest and Eastleigh will go in with Southampton. Similarly, Fareham, Gosport and Havant are likely to go in with Portsmouth. But what about the rest of Hampshire? I believe the most sensible solution would be for a North Hampshire authority, comprising Basingstoke, Hart and Rushmore, and a Mid-Hampshire one, comprising Winchester, Test Valley and East Hampshire. Whilst there will be undoubtedly some advantages with this reorganisation, the danger is that the cost of the changes will outweigh any savings which might result, as has happened before. There are a lot of issues which will need to be sorted out, and I believe a public consultation should start now before decisions are made behind closed doors, and that from Andrew Beadle, Milesdown Place, St Giles Hill, Winchester.
Sign petition. Many of you know me locally and have helped me reach the incredible £10,000 target we were working towards with the Sarah's Hope Trust. Because of your generosity, I am soon leaving for Prague for surgery. Thank you very much. In the meantime, I now have started a petition to get the UK government to take a relook at putting our surgery back into the NHS, as I believe it's not fair we have to travel to other countries, let alone needing to raise money to get our condition treated. I have an atypical pineal liaison, basically known as cystic tumour. Many others have the pineal cysts. We suffer immensely from pain, mobility issues and daily seizures. So this operation is life-changing for us. Personally, I now have to use a wheelchair outside of the house and a walking stick at home. Many others, like myself, also have their cyst or tumour cause, FND, which is the functional neurological disorder or trigeminal neuralgia. Both are conditions which I would not wish on my worst enemy, as I have both. I want to urge readers to stand with us and sign my petition and not only help get this actioned but change lives. Together we can do anything. We just have to believe. Sign the petition here. petition.parliament.uk/petitions/714520. Many thanks, and that's from Sue Pollard Dambash from Swanmore.
Honesty, welcome. Thank you for the coverage of the River Park affair and for the particularly clear photos you've used of the decaying building. As your editorial says, there is a silver lining to the River Park setback. In fact, I wouldn't call it a setback. It's a full stop and a welcome outbreak of honesty after the obfuscation of the whole "we've been approached by the university" affair. As I've said before on these pages, it was Winchester City Council which approached the university, not the other way round. And the university initially said applied, no thank you, until its arm was twisted. All of this has been made plain in various Freedom of Information requests by friends of River Park. The silver linings are various. No oversized, inappropriate building, no virtual privatisation in the face of legal covenants that go back over 100 years, a chance to rip up the acres of tarmac that are not only unlovely, but also add greatly to flood risk, and an opportunity to do something with the site to benefit the community, in keeping with the intentions of the original transfer of the land to the city. As you point out, there are popular and successful Lidos in Petersfield and Lymington, both with populations less than half the size of Winchester. The Lido Guide, published in 2019, lists well over 100 across the country, and a number have opened or reopened since. The petition that was presented to WCC almost exactly 4 years ago had over 3,000 signatures on it. It was, of course, rejected in the heady light of the deal with the university. But as is clear, times have changed. There is room on the site for a low-key, environmentally friendly lido, as well as more grassland or reed beds to alleviate flood risk. The Green Party's collection of views, also page 3 on March the 27th, illustrates supports for this. A previous and hugely more expensive WCC consultation on proposals for the open land at River Park, not the leisure centre site, was roundly rejected for its gimmicks, such as plastic trees for shade. I am delighted that the art school occupies, once more, the wing of the Guildhall, which does, after all, have School of Art, carved into the handsome 19th century Gothic doorway. And I wait to see the plans for the old police station site. But right now, I'm extremely happy about the truth of this shabby non-sale has finally emerged. And that's from Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
That concludes the letters. And now we have editorial comment, I think, Mickey.
Has a little heading here underneath Hampshire Chronicle. It's published in 1772. That's quite something. I'm sure you all knew that, but I didn't. Anyway, it's headed Concerns Over the Future of the Market. The market traders in Winchester are up in arms over a proposed hefty rise in the rents many will pay for to the City Council. In our front page story, we spoke to a number, and several have told of having to pay thousands of pounds a year extra. One trader, Kerry Howard, told us, "I think it may be the death of this market over time, because this is already the most expensive market. I think there will be stallholders who come on a casual basis. I think it will change the face of the market, sadly. We have all been loyal. It is not good for the high street." This is a difficult one. On the one hand, the City Council needs to run an attractive market that encourages people into Winchester, but that costs money, so it needs to ensure it is bringing in sufficient revenue. It has recently invested £50,000 in a revamp. But on the other hand, it has to maintain the diversity of what is being offered. The market is becoming more important as the number of shops on the high street continues to fall. That decline is not all one-way traffic. Westland's Farm Shop has replaced a cafe, for example. Miss Howard's concern that this could be the death of the market might be too pessimistic, but it would be remiss to be complacent. It is imperative that stalls such as the butcher's and greengrocer are retained. The council does have a track record of over-tinkering. A couple of years ago, it planned to eject several shops in King's Walk to create a new creative quarter, failing to realise that creative quarters evolve naturally. Fortunately, common sense prevailed, and those were spared. The market needs care too.
Thank you. Now we move on to first person, please, Norma.
And George Hayter is hoping for the best. When I was a rash 25-year-old, a friend and I were not having much luck hitchhiking across the USA, so we decided to try jumping a freight. In America, phrases like freight jumping mean surreptitiously boarding a railway goods wagon and travelling inside it for free of charge, usually for hundreds of miles. Jumping a freight was common during the 1930s, American Depression, and became part of the American folklore, celebrated in song and film. So me and my friend walked into a Midwest freight yard and boldly asked a worker how to jump a freight to the Pacific coast. The man was helpful, pointing us where a train heading there would leave in 20 minutes. He even apologised to us. "There's no boxcars," he warned, "just gondolas." A boxcar was a mobile enclosure offering protection from the winter cold. Gondolas were low, open trucks offering no protection. We found the right track, clambered up and dropped into the cold steel of an empty gondola. The train duly clattered forward. We were heading west in style. I will never forget the encouragement we received from that railway worker. He was among many friendly Americans I met as a youngster who loved the USA. How much friendly America seems to have changed since unfriendly Trump became president. He has damaged the US links with its traditional allies and instead aligned the US with murderous dictator Vladimir Putin and other authoritarian leaders. Trump came close to endorsing Putin's invasion of Ukraine while incredibly threatening the invasion on his friendly neighbours Canada and Greenland. His style has been to insult and to bully, and his values are based not on right or wrong, but on strength. Democratic governments around the globe are struggling to know how to react to Trump's headlong destruction of America as we used to know it. Can it get any worse? Before he first came into power, the media and political pundits tried to reassure us, predicting that brash Trump would mellow once he was in the White House. Since then, he has denied the result of an election and encouraged supporters to attack the Capitol building. There are experts still making mistake of thinking Trump's behaviour will not turn out as bad as it feared. Will he get even worse than he is now? Consider the possibility just in case. Let's look at what further setbacks unpredictable Trump could unleash upon the world. He's 79. In case he dies, we should also ask if similar damaging policies might be introduced by like-thinking right-wing conservative Vice President Vance. Both men seem to enjoy humiliating allies. That foreign policy may intensify with more trade sanctions, withdrawal from NATO, and non-cooperation in every sphere, from visas to intelligence. A few months ago, no one suspected that America would favour Russia over Ukraine. So now we cannot rule out events leading to reinvented America eventually attacking a defined European nation, perhaps even the UK. Trump decrees could cause worldwide recession, bringing increased poverty and social instability to countries including Britain. Rapid change and worldwide instability could lead to sudden flare-ups and hostility between peaceful nations. Hope for the best, but prepare for the worst. What can Britain do to help prevent disaster? Expand our military, reinforce alliances, and increase resilience in food and energy. And in case the world fragments, it will help us to keep noble Scotland with us in the UK. We must resist temptation to believe that the dramatic events in America might be doing good, when we can see that truth, justice and freedom are at risk of being crushed. One thing we can be grateful for, we are not in America. Here, government is not being replaced by madness. Good luck to all peaceful Americans.
And I have a couple of items from Belgarin, please, Andrew.
And Belgarin with its alternative look at the news. City Museum wins award. A Winchester museum has won a national award for a short film on Gurkha heritage. The Gurkha Museum Trust in Winchester scooped the People's Choice Award at the Smiley Charity Awards 2025. The museum thanked everyone who supported its short film, which was made by the museum's small team. The film shows Gurkha veterans talking to the younger generation about the museum in Peninsula Barracks and its upcoming changes. The museum said that the support from fans was vital in winning the award for charities, with a turnover between £500,000 and £1 million. The museum's film has put a spotlight on the Gurkha's heritage, charity, and its upcoming redevelopment project called Project Cato. The film shows the museum's journey from a small military exhibit to a top attraction in Winchester and a world centre for Gurkha heritage. The redevelopment will make the museum more accessible and inclusive, teaching both current and future generations about the values and bravery of the Gurkhas. The Gurkha Museum Trust is looking forward to continuing its fundraising campaign for Project Cato after its national recognition, and the museum is in the process of raising funds for the redevelopment. And that article is accompanied by a picture of, I guess, the director of the museum, or the manager of the museum, holding very proudly the People's Choice Award, which they won at the Charity Awards 2025. The second article is one that I suppose I've got a vested interest in, which is the Victorian House to be demolished. The building to the right of the church tower is not long for this world. It will be demolished for the Chettle Theatre's long-awaited extension. The Amdram Society has planning permission for the development, which will give it much more space than just the confines of the medieval church, its base since the 1960s. But it means that there is no room for the Victorian terraced house on Chessel Street and the back garden extension that, until the 1980s, was the home of the Earleys, the coal merchants, and as previously featured in this column. And that's accompanied by a photograph which shows the view from the rear, the back of the Chessel Theatre, a lovely Chessel Theatre, and the site which will be rebuilt as an extension to the Chessel Theatre.
Well, now we have this week's announcements, and we start with what's on. Excuse me. Firstly, the National Trust are hosting Easter adventures at Mottisfont, Hinton Ampner and The Vine for families to take part in Easter egg trails. Each venue will offer unique outdoor activities inspired by nature, beauty and history. They run through the school holidays and over the Easter bank holiday. They begin Saturday, April the 5th and run till Monday, April the 21st. And offer a host of activities, from wildlife-themed challenges set by the Spring Bunny to Regency-themed games such as giant dominoes and croquet. At the Theatre Royal, there's an award-winning show allowing audiences to shape the story, and that's returning to Winchester. It will perform at the Theatre Royal on Saturday, April the 12th, with a show for children at 3 p.m. and one for the over-12s at 7:30 p.m. In the Showstoppers Kids Show, the audience is invited to shout out ideas to create a one-of-a-kind musical adventure. The cast will transform these suggestions, from characters like Peppa Pig and Spider-Man, to settings like a magical castle or spooky graveyard, into a unique performance, all made up on the spot. Later in the evening, those aged 12 and over can enjoy Showstopper, the improvised musical. And this show also involves the audience, who will provide the ideas for a new musical comedy created live on stage. So that's on Saturday, April the 12th. If anybody wants further details, the box office is 01962 840 440. And also at the Theatre Royal, the comedian Lou Sanders will bring her show, which explores being human, to Winchester. The comedian will take to the stage at the Theatre Royal on Sunday, April the 13th at 7:30 p.m. as part of her No Kissing in the Bingo Hall tour. The show, described as a deep, dumb show for the masses, Sanders is widely recognised for her appearances on popular comedy panel shows such as BBC's QI and Would I Lie to You? And she's also known for her performances on and hosting duties on Live at the Apollo. In addition to her TV work, Sanders writes sitcoms and occasionally covers on BBC Radio 5. No Kissing in the Bingo Hall is recommended for ages 14 and above. And if you want further details or tickets, it's the Theatre Royal box office on 01962 840 440. And now lighting up time ends Friday the 4th of April at 6:35 a.m. and begins at 7:42 p.m. On Wednesday the 9th of April it ends at 6:24 a.m. and begins at 7:51 p.m. And if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our free recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received, please contact us on 01962 861 229. And this number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And now we continue with other items of general news.
And this one headed £17 million country home facing demolition. An idyllic £17 million Hampshire country house visited by Jane Austen is set to be demolished after a council found the building had no direct influence on her literary output. Proposals to level Ash Park, the residence where the celebrated author loved to spend her time, has been criticised as awful and a shame. The 232-acre estate near Basingstoke has been described as a perfect, elegant country home, sitting among rolling parkland and space for shooting and fishing in the grounds. The house itself has 7 bedrooms, including a palatial master bedroom, 5 reception rooms and an ornate library. There are also several outbuildings, including a party barn with a cinema, a polo ground and an exceptional garden with fruit trees and wildflowers. However, its new owners, who are believed to be from Hong Kong or China, argued it is tired and unmanaged, lacks architectural merit, and wanted to replace it with an entirely new house. The oldest parts of the property date back to the 1600s, and historic literary figure Austen wrote in her letters about attending balls there in the 1790s. Austen was born in Steventon Rectory, just a mile from the house, and this year is the 250th anniversary of the Pride and Prejudice's author's birth. Property records show Ash Park was bought on October 2022 for an eye-watering £17 million by Shuk Ting Sharon Lung and Gillian Sin Hang Ho. They put forward plans to demolish the main house, 2 outbuildings and a former bottling plant to build a traditional country house connected to an indoor swimming pool. They are planning to build a Queen Anne architectural style house to take centre stage on the estate. The plan had been met with an anger by local residents concerned about the loss of heritage and the environmental impact of demolition and rebuilding. However, despite 20 objections, Basingstoke and Dean Borough Council approved the plan. They said that according to experts at Historic England, HE, so many alterations had been carried out to the house since Austen's time that the building was not really the same anymore. Quoting HE advice, in its report, the local authority's planning committee said, Jane Austen refers to visiting the previous Ash Park house in her letters, but there is no evidence that this earlier building is embedded in the current house of 1865, built nearly 50 years after her death, nor that it had any direct influence on her literary output. The current Ash Park is very likely not the house visited by Austen. On the whole, it is not considered that a heritage reason for refusal could be substantiated. The proposal would not result in the loss of any building which is of historical or architectural interest and would lead to enhancements to the visual amenity of the landscape. Retired Caroline Sykes, who lives in a large farmhouse close to the estate, said at the time the plans were put forward, I just think it's such a waste. We've got a large house there that has been fairly recently renovated to a very high specification. Not everyone in the area is opposed to the demolition. Sharon George was born in a house facing the estate and says the building is beyond repair. The state of the property and the surroundings is beyond repair, the 65-year-old said. The house has had so many additions, it does not reflect what was there. The plans look very tasteful. If it had been a modern Swiss chalet, that would be different. It will regenerate the property. Local retiree Russ Bird said, I'm perfectly happy with it. It is not going to bother us. If you look at any house, they all evolve and change. Owners are just creating a new bit of its history. And there are some wonderful photographs taken, mainly by drones, from the height from above. It is a seriously grand and big house with a lot of outbuildings. I mean, I can see 6 garages, for example, let alone the, what was it, centre with the cinema in it and the rest of it. And another one was showing the gardens and a lot of beautiful trees around and lawns. I mean, it's beautiful. But the picture taken of the front of the house, I would say it looks completely wrecked. It really is not a happy house.
Bus pass cut, devastating blow. Disabled campaigners have expressed their anger at the County Council's cutting of their bus passes. The controversial plans remove all enhancements to the scheme in Hampshire due to the council's financial position, the forecasted budget gap. From April the 1st, disabled residents cannot use their passes before 9:30 a.m. or after 11 p.m. on weekdays. Those who cannot travel alone will also be stripped of their companion's pass, which currently gives free travel to a volunteer who assists them. Susan Dorset from Knightwood Valley Park campaigners called the plans another devastating, frustrating blow to our disabled residents. She continued, this comes on top of the existing and forthcoming bus service and community transport cuts, leaving disabled and older Knightwood residents in particularly isolated and cut off. And there's a picture of Susan Dorset with 2 other companions in Winchester holding up their petition.
And this article is another sign of the times, I'm afraid. W.H. Smith's High Street stores to be rebranded. Retailer W.H. Smith has agreed to sell its UK High Street chain to Modella Capital. In a deal valued at £76 million, it will see the brand's High Street stores eventually rebrand as T.G. Jones. The branches include High Street Winchester and Marketplace Romsey. The country's High Street operation is made up of about 500 stores, the first of which was opened 230 years ago. Over the past decade, the firm has focused on its more fruitful travel retail business, which operates from airports, train stations, and hospitals. The High Street business now accounts for only about 15% of the annual group trading profit. WH Smith agrees to sell off its UK High Street chain, and sharing details of the sale, WH Smith said all stores, colleagues, assets and liabilities of the High Street business will move under Modella Capital's ownership as part of the transaction. The retailer added that the High Street chain will operate for a short transitional period under the WH Smith brand, whilst the business rebrands as T.G. Jones. Carl Cowling, Group Chief Executive at WH Smith, said, High Street is a good business. It's profitable and cash generative with an experienced and high-performing management team. However, given our rapid international growth, now is the right time for a new owner to take over the High Street business and take it forward, and for the WH Smith leadership team to focus exclusively on our travel business.
2 brave women to raise funds for charity. 2 women will run the London Landmarks Half Marathon to raise funds for the charity that supported them after the loss of their babies. Gemma Heaver and Emma Zinn will take on the challenge while grieving their losses, but also feeling joy at helping the Hampshire Hospital's charity Forget Me Not Fund. The fund provides one-to-one support and group sessions for those who have lost a baby. Gemma will run on April the 6th in memory of her son Oscar, who died during childbirth. She said, I'd planned a home birth, and it started well. For the first few hours, everything seemed to be going as it should. Then something went wrong. We were told we had to go to hospital, and when I arrived, they told me Oscar hadn't made it. I went numb. Giving birth to him was the most difficult thing I've ever had to do. After Oscar's death, Gemma received counselling and joined the Flutterbys community group, where families who have received care from Hampshire hospitals meet for peer support. Emma will also be running in support of the charity after the loss of her daughter, River, at just 19 weeks. She said, the 12-week scan went well. 5 days after we were called with the results of the blood test that had been taken and were told that there was a high risk that the baby could have Edwards syndrome, a genetic condition which can cause serious health conditions, and most babies with full Edwards syndrome die before or shortly after birth.
Charity grateful for video doorbells gift. A Hampshire charity has been donated a supply of video doorbells to help vulnerable residents. The Blue Lamp Trust has been given a stock of Ring video doorbells by Ageas Insurance. The doorbells will be used to help residents who cannot afford their own. The Blue Lamp Trust and Ageas, through its Rias Insurance brand, have worked to supply and install Ring video doorbells in the homes of older or vulnerable customers in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. So far, the Trust has visited more than 130 Rias customers in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, and as well as installing the doorbells, have also carried out a free crime and fire prevention survey at the property. Chief Executive Officer Emma Burt said, we are incredibly grateful to Ageas for the support they have given us over recent years, and having this supply of Ring video doorbells that we can fit at our discretion for the most in need within our community is a real help. We often receive requests that we cannot fulfil due to the cost implications, so it would be wonderful to be able to say yes to those who really need our assistance. Ring video doorbells can be a great deterrent, but can also be used to gain evidence against cases of domestic abuse or antisocial behaviour.
Country chic town among UK's poshest. A country chic Hampshire spot has been named among the UK's poshest towns for a visit. Stockbridge was featured alongside 14 others in a list from The Telegraph, detailing the poshest spots for a mini-break. The publication wrote, posh is a bit of a love-hate thing, isn't it? Most of us, the lesser privileged masses, nurture an envious dislike for those who get to live in a whirl of Michelin stars, barber jackets, cashmere, Krug, and organic everything. But when it comes to a nice British mini-break, that's exactly the world we want to inhabit, just for a weekend. We want towns that have comely high streets, shops we can't afford, fancy bakeries, big fat stately homes, and a certain air of gentility. The full list of the UK's poshest towns for a mini-break can be found on the Telegraph website. Why is Stockbridge among the UK's poshest towns for a visit? Stockbridge was praised by the Sunday Times for its beautiful scenery, its great high street options, and its fly fishing club. They wrote, ah, Stockbridge. A few years ago, this pretty Hampshire town recorded the largest increase in houses, selling for over £1 million. It's a very country chic, but in a jolly lovely way. Think Dubarry Boots, Fairfax and Favour, posh pubs, and the fishing set. The latter love it for the River Test, a classic chalk stream. Indeed, Stockbridge is home for the Horton, England's most exclusive fly fishing club, which was founded in 1822. Take a stroll along the river, or wander the high street of delis, butchers, bakers and country outfitters. For dinner, head to the Greyhound on the Test. Michelin guide rated modern British dining by the river. Discussing a must-see place in the town, the publication recommended the nearby Leckford Estate. They added, this large estate grows for Waitrose. In fact, I think it's actually owned by Waitrose, but certainly it works for Waitrose and has a farm shop, nursery, gardens, golf course, and cafe. Finally, if you're looking for a place to stay, the Grosvenor was highlighted. It's said to be a striking Georgian pile which offers a high-end yet relaxed vibe. On the Visit Hampshire website, Stockbridge is said to have a long and varied history, which has inspired many poets over the years. Recommended reading.
And on a lower note, hundreds gather for Tesla takedown. The Tesla showroom in Winchester saw a demonstration on Saturday, March the 29th, as people protested across the country. A day of Tesla takedown gatherings saw more than 500 protests at Elon Musk's showrooms around the world. It was good to hear so many of the passing drivers hooting their support, said one of the demonstrators at the showroom in Winnell. Another protester, who asked not to be named, said, Tesla takedown is all about peaceful legal protest. She said, there are lots of peaceful legal ways to help. Don't buy a Tesla. If you already have a Tesla, sell it. If you have a different EV, don't use Tesla charges. If you have Tesla stock, sell it. If you use Uber, tell them you don't want to be seen in a Tesla. The movement was born as a result of what many see as Elon Musk's unsavory political stances, including his involvement with the Trump administration. And as a photograph of two of the protesters, two men, one holding a whippet and the other holding a sign, which I'm afraid I can't tell you what because it's quite rude.
Seniors gather to enjoy Rotary Tea Party in Hall. More than 100 people came together to have tea and share stories at Winchester's Rotary Senior Party. The annual event returned on Saturday, March the 29th, with the gathering taking place in the Edmonds Room of Itchin Abbas Village Hall. The attendees, who came from a range of communities across Winchester District, were able to enjoy a variety of activities, including bingo, a quiz and music, sandwiches, tea, cake and scones made by the Inner Wheel were also served, and performers from the Chesil Theatre performed short scenes for the attendees. Winchester Rotary President Paul Russell said, I think it has gone quite well. We have more than 100 people here today from Winchester and the surrounding area. They have had a great afternoon, which is really important and nice to see. The people here have come from care homes, churches and communities. We're always happy to hear from other groups who are interested in joining in. We are grateful to everyone who has helped us out this year. We want to thank the Inner Wheel for helping with the catering, Rotaract for helping set things up and serving, and Chesil Theatre for helping with the entertainment. And of course, thank you, Anne Smith, the Rotary member who set the event up. Among the attendees who were enjoying the event was Douglas Field. Douglas said he was at the event last year and that it was very good. Douglas said he was a royal chauffeur for the approximately 12 years between 1950 and 1962. He said it was a very good time. I did it for 12 years. I visited all the palaces, including Balmoral. Another visitor at the event was the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Russell Gordon Smith. In the speech to the attendees, he said, It is a great joy to be with you all here. I am sure you will appreciate the efforts that has gone into for this event. As mayor, I have become very aware of all the work they do, setting up events, helping with events and charities locally. For more information about the Winchester Rotary can be found on its website. And there are a number of pictures. There are three pictures of all the visitors sitting at their tables with a lovely floral decoration in the middle of polyanthus. And there's a picture of Douglas Field at the party, looking very smart in a grey shirt with sort of flowers, well, not flowers, leaves all over it. And there's a picture of all the cakes that were served up at the table. And as I was there, I can vouch for the tastiness of the cakes. I was there performing.
Not just eating the cakes.
Not just eating the cakes, no.
Nursing student Miles in pioneering NHS study. A nursing student has been featured in a new NHS case study. Miles Jordan from the University of Winchester is the first learning disability nurse, RNLD, to have carried out a work placement at a GP surgery in Southampton. The 24-year-old said, "It was a great opportunity to broaden my understanding and skills to support my development as a learning disability nurse." Miles worked at the Living Well Partnership, which has a number of GP practices across Southampton. He spent most of his time at Ladies Walk Surgery in Thornhill. But during his placement, he gained hands-on experience in diabetes consultations, hypertension monitoring, asthma consultations, wound care, immunizations, and travel vaccinations. Miles said, "I was very glad to have the opportunity. It was different from anything I've done before, and I really enjoyed the variety of tasks. It has given me confidence that I can put into practice the knowledge of health conditions that I have learned at Winchester." Miles, from Southampton, came to nursing after working as a support worker for people with learning disabilities in the New Forest during the coronavirus pandemic. He still works part-time at Oakhurst Lodge, and that's a specialist residential home for adults in Ashurst in the New Forest. After leaving Cantill School, Miles studied to be a boat builder before opting for a medical career. He was set to become a paramedic before deciding on a role minimizing health inequality for people with learning disabilities. He said, "I enjoyed supporting people with learning disabilities, but I had no idea there was a way to take it further. I only found out about the role of an LD nurse towards the end of my course." Anna Branco, a practice nurse who was Miles' assessor during his placement, said, "Miles was open to learn and embrace any learning opportunities I was able to arrange. Some of these opportunities were not on site. GP surgeries are closely linked to other community services, and therefore we were able to arrange placement days within end-of-life settings, district nursing, and mental health. It's important to supply student health practitioners with placements within a primary care environment, as it provides access to a wide range of conditions and patient populations, with an emphasis of care on disease prevention."
Austin anniversary to be honoured at fair. A village will host a country fair to celebrate the 250th anniversary of Jane Austen's birth. The Jane Austen Regency Country Fair takes place on Sunday, July the 6th, in Steventon, where the famous author was born on December the 16th, 1775. The fair will be held in Pump Field, where Jane's childhood home, Steventon Rectory, once stood before it was demolished in 1824. The field still looks onto the private homes of which would have been Jane's neighbours, and the church bells of St Nicholas, where Jane's father was rector, will chime across the fields. The fair will feature performances by the Hampshire Regency Dancers and Mayfly Morris, as well as demonstrations of country arts and crafts. Austen-themed talks and performances and fete games, food, drink and stalls. Historian, author and TV presenter Lucy Worsley will be special guest, giving talks, book signings and Q&As. She said, "I am honoured and delighted to join Steventon in hosting this important event to celebrate the birth of Jane Austen. To be in the field where Jane's imagination was established and inspired will be a significant and enjoyable and memorable event. Adrian Lucas, known to Austin fans as Mr. Wickham in the 1995 BBC adaptation of Pride and Prejudice, will also be attending and participating in Q&As with fairgoers. He said, "Jane Austen has held a special place in my heart since I was lucky enough to play the dishonourable cad, Mr. George Wickham. I look forward to meeting like-minded fans to reminisce and enjoy some light-hearted Regency nostalgia in a beautiful setting." Tamsin Raymond of Steventon Village, a Steventon Village resident and Fair Committee lead, said, "It is said that Jane spent the most tranquil days of her life here in Steventon, which led her to write three of her seven novels in this very village: Sense and Sensibility, 1811, Pride and Prejudice, 1813, and Northanger Abbey, 1817. We look forward to celebrating Jane in an unchanged location, where established fans and Jane newbies alike can talk with historians and actors, enjoy a few Regency pursuits and games, treat themselves to food and drink, and soak up the atmosphere of a bygone era."
Ambulances go solar. The South Central Ambulance Service, NHS Foundation Trust, SCAS, has secured more than £1 million in NHS funding for solar projects. The funding is part of the £100 million national investment in solar and battery installations aimed at enhancing energy efficiency across the NHS. The scheme, jointly run by the Department for Energy Security and Net Zero, the Department of Health and Social Care, Great British Energy and NHS England, will see ESCAS install solar panels at four locations across its estate. The chosen sites are Winchester and Eastleigh Resource Centre, North Harbour Resource Centre in Portsmouth, Abingdon Fleet Services and Stoke Mandeville Resource Centre in Aylesbury. The work is already started at the Winchester site, with ESCAS keen to demonstrate the financial and environmental benefits solar photovoltaic PV installations with battery storage. Jonathan Guppy, sustainability manager of ESCAS, said, "ESCAS has started the transition to an electric vehicle fleet, and we also have ambitious plans to decarbonise our heating. Both of these initiatives will see the significant increase in our electricity consumption, so installing solar PV with battery energy storage systems will offset this cost."
And my article, adding to the other two we've already had on electric vehicles, and for people who don't want to use the Tesla system, there's the incredible new EV facility has opened, and the charging station is the biggest in the UK. The UK's largest rapid EV charging station has officially opened near Winchester. The site, which was constructed by Basingstoke company Instavolt at Three Maids Hill for approximately £7 million, was opened by Winchester MP Danny Chambers, City Council leader Martin Todd, and Instavolt CEO Delvin Lane last Thursday, March the 27th. City Council representatives, Instavolt employees and special guests, including former Top Gear presenter Quinton Nelson, were shown around the site, which uses a mixture of solar panels and batteries to increase energy efficiency and reduce strain on the national grid. The charging station has spaces for 44 electric vehicles and 15 non-electric vehicles, as well as a playground, 24-hour toilets and a Starbucks. Mr. Wilson said he believed the site to be really significant. He said, "It's a hybrid of solar, of battery, of grid, and it's really sustainable. The scale of it is what's so impressive. You can come here, charge your car, have a Starbucks coffee, the kids can play, the dogs can exercise, you can even charge a caravan here, or an HGV. This is what the future of electric car charging looks like. I think Winchester City Council and the planners here have done a great job that sends a message out to the rest of the UK that this is what we need to do. It's a no-brainer. I stand here and say, this is innovation. This is growth. This is great for the local community and air quality and sustainability. Mr. Lane said that Instavolt's new charging station adds approximately 30 jobs to the local area. And he continued, it's been a labour of love over the last 9 months' construction and 2.5 years of planning and design and development before that. So it's been an incredible achievement by all the team really to get to where we are today. It's been a big investment, nearly £7 million for us, and you can see almost every bay is full, which is great to see on our fourth day since we opened to the public. We've been averaging more than 70 charges per day, and we expect an uptake in the summer as people go on holiday. And this is a perfect getaway site, really is. Mr. Lane also announced that the site is among the cheapest charging sites in the UK, with a special offer on evening charging. Councillor Todd said that the City Council had backed the project, and he is very pleased to see the project come here. Our council plan talks about going greener faster, and this is the living embodiment of it. You can charge your car with green electricity faster than you could before. And the main target is people using the A34, but it's going to be a really useful facility for people in Winchester, particularly with the new evening offer. And this is accompanied by a whole series of photographs of people looking very pleased with themselves and cutting tapes and... And also a rather fine picture of some of the batteries at the station, which appeals to me, actually. Jolly good shot of the picture of the batteries.
Their own. Okay, leisure centre dream that ended up as an eyesore. Drone footage has revealed the state of the abandoned River Park Leisure Centre. This comes following the news that the University of Southampton has pulled out of an agreement with Winchester City Council to redevelop the derelict River Park Leisure Centre. Council leader Martin Todd revealed on Thursday, March the 20th, that the university will be investing £30 million in its Winchester sites, which include Winchester School of Art, and will not move forward with its plans for the former sports hub in the north of the city. New photographs and footage show the former leisure centre in a sorry state. The River Park Leisure Centre has lain empty for several years and has been targeted by vandal and graffiti artists. Shots taken from above show rust and moss taking control of the roof. The building looks no better from the sky than the ground. River Park Leisure Centre was last used in 2021, just before the Winchester Sport and Leisure Centre opened in Bar End. Local campaigners want the site to be retained as a public space, arguing the area was left to the city for public recreation. The land on which the centre sites was donated to the forerunner of the City Council in the earlier 20th century with the stipulation that it be used for public recreational use. Other suggested uses for the site have included a lido and public open space. Winchester City Council has been approached for comment. And there's a lot of photographs taken with a drone from above, and I must say it does look very sad and such a waste.
Plans for Bushfield Camp gather pace. Plans to transform Bushfield Camp into a knowledge park have taken a step forward. A strategic collaboration has been announced between development partners and Sparshot College. The Church Commissioners for England and Legal & General and Gisborne, who are bringing forward plans to transform the site, have teamed up with the Land, Environment and Animal Education Institution to explore options for the proposals for the legacy land at Bushfield Camp. The camp is made up of more than 60 acres of green space. More than 60% of Bushfield Camp will not be developed, and more than 60 acres will be retained as new publicly accessible open space. The collaboration will look to identify ecological priorities, assisting with the biodiversity net gain proposals for the development and the educational priorities of Sparshall College. Joanna Loxton, Head of Land for Church Commissioners for England, said, "As custodians of this land, we are tremendously excited to collaborate with Sparshall College to support making the most of the opportunity that Bushfield's extensive legacy land has to offer. Once complete, Bushfield will become a new knowledge quarter, which puts sustainability, inclusivity and well-being at the heart of its design." The announcement follows a survey of Winchester residents and stakeholders, which gathered more than 900 responses. 74% of respondents wanted to see specialist groups or conservation bodies work together to manage the area for Bushfield's undeveloped land to be used as an educational resource for local schools and colleges. Julian Milbourne, principal at Sparshall College, said, "As a proud Winchester educational institution, Sparshall is delighted to be working in collaboration with Bushfield Camp development team. The legacy land presents an exciting opportunity to put our 125 years of land management and stewardship experience to good use locally, further bring the education of our students and protecting and enhancing this important green space for the local community and wildlife." Ben Rogers, Head of Regeneration at L&G, added, "Our collaboration with Sparshall College is a fantastic opportunity to ensure that the legacy land supports biodiversity."
University plan to convert empty site into a new hub. Work has begun on a new hub near the train station for Winchester School of Art. The University of Southampton, which runs the school, has applied to Winchester City Council to turn the currently empty Capitol House on Andover Road near the station into a creator or a centre for creative technologies. These prospective changes to the building include to its facade, the replacement of the current entrance, an access ramp, and removal of a roof turret. Last March, the university applied for a change of use of Capitol House in Andover Road. The four-story, mid-1980s building of 2,550 square metres would be the first School of Art building away from its main campus, which is around half a mile away on Park Avenue. Until recently, Capitol House was used as civic back office space for Hampshire County Council, but has been vacant for a long period. It was also used as the temporary base for Winchester Library when the building in Jury Street was being converted into the Discovery Centre in the 2000s. In a letter published with the application last March, the university's agent said, "Our client is excited about the opportunity of bringing forward a beneficial use for the future of Capitol House by creating a new teaching space for Winchester School of Arts in a prominent location. It is deemed that the site is suitable for use by the school as a centre for creative technologies by the university and by virtue of its existing layout and floor space arrangement. The building is proposed to be used solely for academic teaching space and will not include dedicated social facilities. There is an opportunity to give Capitol House its own distinct identity in this area and secure a foothold for the University of Southampton in Winchester, whilst maintaining close links to its core campus. Establishing Capitol House as a centre for creative technologies has the potential to create a vibrant and exciting hub for research, teaching, public engagement and enterprise, and building on the existing success of the Games, Design and Creative Technology courses, which currently do not have dedicated fit-for-purpose facilities on the main WSA campus. The proposed use of the site will positively contribute to the local economy through the active use of the site as an educational facility. Bringing life back to this key site will have positive knock-on effects for local businesses through students benefiting from local amenities and commercial offerings. And that's accompanied by a photograph of the site on which work has already started.
Man arrested on suspicion of burglaries. A man has been arrested in connection with two burglaries in the Winchester area. Police were called at around 10 p.m. on January the 22nd to reports of a burglary at an estate in Itchinstoke after entry was forced to storage containers. There was also a further shed burglary at an address in Folly Hill Lane. On police arrival, a vehicle was seen driving away that was suspected to have been involved in the burglaries. Officers pursued the vehicle, which was then involved in a collision with a property, causing significant damage. The driver left the vehicle and fled, but was not located. Following inquiries, on Monday, 24th of March, a 27-year-old man from Chessington was arrested on suspicion of burglary, criminal damage, and failing to stop for police. He has been released on police bail as the investigation continues.
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors for selecting them and to the copying and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye and do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.